This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey everybody, it's Jessica, and today we bring you an episode all about the 2024 election, and specifically about the debate between Vice President Harris and former President Trump, which now looks like it will be the only debate between these two presidential contenders. Our guest is Graham Slattery. He's a Washington-based correspondent covering campaigns and Congress for Reuters. Previously, he worked in Rio de Janeiro, São Paulo, Santiago, and has reported extensively throughout Latin America. He's the co-winner of the 2021 Reuters Journalist of the Year in Business Coverage category for a series that he did on corruption and fraud in the oil industry. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Graham, thank you so much for joining us, for passing judgment with us to talk about the latest in the presidential race and specifically to talk about the debate, which I know you covered and have written a number of pieces about for Reuters.
Thanks for having me on.
So I want to start actually a little bit before the debate in the sense of what do you think would have been a win for both candidates? What did Harris need to do going in? And what was the wisdom about what Trump needed to do?
Well, I think the general consensus is that Harris needed to do two things. She needed to flesh out her policy ideas in front of voters. You know, we've had a lot of polling that just indicates that a lot of voters want to know more about her. And that's just not the case with Trump. Most voters say they know enough about him. He's been on the scene for almost a decade, so there's not really much in terms of things that he can say about himself that are going to move the needle at this point. Also, she needed to really goad Trump into making a mistake. And I think she succeeded in that. Obviously, there was that interaction that's made the rounds in which Trump really digs into saying incorrectly that Haitian immigrants in Ohio were eating people's pets. Mm-hmm. For Trump, he really needed to show that he had discipline, that he is able to stick to the issues and to stay away from some of the more race-based or gender-based attacks he's leaned into in recent months. So I think that it's fair to say general consensus, both among Democrats and Republicans, is that Harris accomplished her goals and she won the debate, and Trump did not accomplish his one real goal. And as such, he lost the debate.
I was watching at a TV studio, so there wasn't a huge audience. It was me and two of the anchors who are obviously journalists and are maintaining their objectivity and neutrality. So it was hard to know how it was landing with everybody else, but certainly that does seem to be the consensus that it was mission accomplished for Kamala Harris and that she really did rattle former President Trump. And I'm wondering if you could take us through maybe the very beginning. I know that you have written about the takeaways, but the first thing that happens, and this was in question, was will there be a handshake? And I know we're talking about the future of our country, and it seems like how are we hyper-focusing on a handshake? But talk to us a little bit about that moment and whether or not you think it was significant.
Well, you know, I think that in hindsight, it was a significant moment, but perhaps not for the reasons that one might think. Basically, that set the tone. You know, you saw Harris walk across the stage, extend her hand, almost sort of get up in Trump's grill a little bit and take the initiative. And very shortly thereafter, you know, you saw her really go on the offensive and put Trump on his back foot, such that even on issues that where he's strong on in voters' minds, like the economy, he really was on the defensive, defending his record and not attacking. So in a sense, it actually set the tone, one in which Harris was going to take the initiative and be the protagonist in the debate. And she was for most of the 2 hours.
How much of the handshake was her asserting herself, you think, saying, I mean, she literally went into his space. Do you think any part of it was, and this is how you say my name?
I think that that's a fair assumption. I don't have any sort of inside the camp information that says that it was sort of a pre-planned moment. But I think it's fair to say that the analysts from both sides of the aisle saw it as that kind of moment. Yes, you know, one in which she was occupying space, both figuratively and literally, that Trump was occupying in some respects. You know, it was a night where she was going to define herself, not let Trump define her. And then she, of course, tried to define Trump as well. So I think that that's accurate in a sense, in a figurative sense.
Yeah, it was interesting because we, of course, have seen former President Trump on a debate stage as candidate for the presidency a number of times, and we've never seen Kamala Harris in that role. So I do think that she had to metaphorically and physically inhabit the space, so to speak. Now, there were a bucket of questions about the economy, and I'm hoping you could talk to us a little bit about whether or not you think the candidates were effective in explaining their differing views to the voters and in trying to get their message across, because there's a reason this was the first bucket of questions. It's the first issue for voters. And totally rationally, this is the thing that is extremely important to most voters.
You know, I think broadly speaking, one would have to say that it was probably a relatively ineffective part of the debate for both candidates, just based on what we've seen. Having talked to voters after the debate and just the internal polling we've had, for Harris, in some ways, you could say it was a success because the polling indicates that on the economy, voters, particularly swing voters, they trust Trump more. And she managed to hold her own in that part of the debate and not allow Trump to really interrogate her in a damaging way. At the same time, I think a lot of voters noticed that the first question from the moderators, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? She largely dodged. And
yeah, there was no yes or no.
Right. So I don't think it was a particularly effective moment for either candidate. I mean, it should have been a strong moment for Trump because he polls well on that issue. Mm-hmm. Voters are angry at the inflation that occurred, particularly in the first years of Biden's term, and he didn't really get his attacks in. I also don't think you can necessarily say that Harris was able to really turn the tables. So I'd say that first part of the debate was a bit of a stalemate. And it wasn't really until half an hour in when we started talking about immigration where perhaps Harris got the upper hand.
So that's interesting. I was just going to ask you about what you think the turning point was. For me, it felt like she was getting her sea legs in the beginning on the economy. That is a rougher question for her because of inflation and because people tend to think that any president and members of his administration are solely responsible for whether or not we experience inflation. But for me, the turning point seemed to be more abortion than immigration. So having said that, could you give us your takeaways for when they first started talking about immigration? And you mentioned that that was a moment where you thought Harris started to get the upper hand.
Right. Well, the moment I was referring to, about half an hour into the debate, Harris made a jab at Trump's rally sizes. And
yes,
you know, there's been a lot of reporting about the relative rally sizes. Honestly, they're probably pretty similar in some respects. But it was a very clever moment because she knew he was sensitive about that topic and it rattled him. And that's when he started talking about this incorrect idea that's gained some currency in some conservative circles that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio are killing and eating people's cats and dogs. She managed to keep him on that subject for several minutes. It was not a successful moment for Trump because it simply, well, one, it's not true. Two, it sounds a little bit out there, simply put, you know, the idea that there's people eating people's pets. And it just didn't make him seem very presidential, which was really her goal. So that's the moment where Harris started to get the upper hand. You know, one of her goals was basically to make Trump look unpresidential. And in that exchange, he simply didn't seem to be addressing voters' concerns, at least in a, you know, as they would articulate them. And he seemed flustered. And he seemed to be talking about niche topics that voters simply haven't been thinking about. Most voters simply haven't been thinking about anyone eating anyone's pets anywhere.
Right. I mean, that's such a good point in the sense of, I think that's the moment where she started to get under his skin. It was, your crowds are small, and we know that he's very sensitive about the size of his crowds at his rallies. And where he went off script, he didn't really answer a question about immigration. He peddled conspiracy theories that have been debunked about Haitian immigrants eating their pets, which is, you know, not just wrong, but I think, as you point out, not something that people think about in their daily lives in terms of how can a president make my life better. And it does seem like that's where she started to really get him on the ropes. And that was clearly her strategy, as you mentioned, throughout, which is to rattle him, to make him look unpresidential. I think to say, is this the person who you want to have the nuclear codes and make decisions about our future, to make policy decisions as well? What was your takeaway from the abortion discussion? Because it seems to me that in addition to all of the problems that President Biden had in the June 27th debate, that he was asked a question about reproductive choice and missed it in a huge way, scored no points. I'm wondering if you think the candidates successfully presented different visions on the reproductive rights issue, or if this was kind of a loser for Trump.
Here's the issue for Trump. Abortion is simply a losing issue for him in general. When you ask voters who do they trust on it, they trust Harris more. Just like they trust Trump more on the economy, they trust Harris more on abortion, bar none. So was it a loser for Trump? I think probably. I think that was a question that he simply wanted to survive and get through. You know, I think that Trump has a very difficult situation on his hands when it comes to this issue, because obviously, in order to win this election, he's going to have to win over some swing voters, but also motivate his base. And their opinions on this issue are worlds apart, which is not the case when you look at Harris's potential coalition. Right. So, you know, I think that, yes, he did lose that exchange, but I think that, you know, he has a very tough hand when he's talking about that issue. So I'm not sure necessarily the campaign was expecting to win that as much as get through it and talk about another issue. And one thing you saw Harris do, in which was perhaps smart and comes from her background as a prosecutor, for better or for worse, when the moderators steer the conversation to an issue where Democrats pulled poorly on, she just changed the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, something that I think, I don't know, you're the lawyer. I think that a lot of smart litigators probably do that in the courtroom too.
Oh, this is something that lawyers and politicians have in common, which is that good ones tend to be good at changing the topic. Now, having said that, of course, in a courtroom, I don't think that any judge really enjoys an attorney who just will not answer their questions. That's, a judge is a somewhat different audience than voters. But yes, pivoting to your strength is something that lawyers and politicians tend to share. So we did certainly see that from Harris. And from my perspective, it was surreal in a lot of ways, in the sense of, in some ways, it feels like a typical debate. And in some ways, it felt like a debate that was happening in some sort of scripted television drama that you might not even believe how you got to this point. But one of the things that was kind of surreal, frankly, to hear about is something that you also wrote about in your takeaways. And that's this idea of weaponized justice. Could you talk us through what that means and what the candidates accused each other of?
Right. So this has become a major issue in the final stretch of this campaign. Both candidates are accusing the other of weaponizing the justice system, you know, using that word, weaponizing. When Trump uses it, he is basically saying, look at all these indictments I'm facing, the state indictments and the federal indictments for, you know, a variety of issues. For instance, trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election. This is all just a conspiracy that's cooked up in the White House. They're directing all these prosecutors, be they federal or local prosecutors. And I should note that, of course, you know, at the local level, these prosecutors are not part of the federal apparatus. So when you look at the New York case or the case in Fulton County, you know, I would just point that out. When Harris talks about the weaponization of the justice system and the Department of Justice, she's referring to comments that Trump has made on the trail that he'll go after his political opponents should he win in November. You know, for instance, he's talked about appointing a special counsel to go after Joe Biden and investigate any dealings he's had in past years. And there's also a lot of Trump's allies, intellectual allies, have discussed the possibility and advocated for eliminating or at least weakening the wall that exists at current between the White House and the Department of Justice. You know, obviously the Department of Justice is part of the executive branch. However, just long-held U.S. norms have held that the Department of Justice enjoys a fair degree of independence because they're going to be potentially investigating members of the executive branch, for instance. That's what she's referring to.
And this is obviously something that we've heard from former President Trump for months, if not years now, that the criminal justice system more generally has targeted him. And then you have Kamala Harris as a former prosecutor saying no and really styling this entire election, as she said from the beginning, between a prosecutor and a convicted felon. And so there's a lot of them and the debate that we know, and you helped talk us through a lot of the high points. I'm wondering if you think there was something that maybe viewers at home missed, or if you think there's something that we should focus on as we think through the next, 50-ish days of the election. Was there moment that you thought really encapsulated, oh, this is what this election is really about? Or was it just the entire debate kind of put together saying she was able to rattle him and he didn't stick to the script, which is what his advisors obviously wanted. And instead he, attacked and aired his grievances, and that's not going to help him with the swing voters.
Well, one thing I would say, when you look at the political process and when you try and prognosticate who's going to win in November, look, as we mentioned, there's a real consensus that Harris won this debate and Trump had a couple of not so golden moments, to say the least. However, there's also a fairly widespread belief in political circles that this might not be a defining moment, that Trump didn't do quite poorly enough to really move the needle in a decisive way. And I think that speaks to just how calcified and polarized the electorate is in general terms. A lot of Harris supporters are going to look at that debate and say, well, she won. Why aren't her numbers going up dramatically? And I think that just speaks to our political moment. Both these candidates at this point, they're really trying to make sure they have as many supporters go to the polls as possible. It's not as much about turning out these on-the-fence voters as you would think, because there simply aren't that many voters left that are truly, truly on the fence. I think one takeaway is Harris won this debate. Why hasn't that fundamentally changed the race?
Yeah.
It speaks to our political moment,
It makes complete sense, because what's interesting to me is that clearly debates do matter, because this wouldn't be Trump versus Harris. It would be Trump versus Biden if debates didn't matter. But as you point out, Harris won the debate, and I'm not sure that it did move the needle, or, in a tight race, anything that moves the needle a little bit could be outcome determinative. So I think anybody who says I know for sure really is just hoping that their guess is right. But you point to such an interesting phenomenon in terms of our polarization and the fact that there really aren't that many undecided voters. So I think my last question for you, Graham, is, do you think there's anything that could have happened in this particular debate that would have changed the race, or maybe changed the race more than it did?
I think that just having talked to some of my contacts in Trump world, as it's sometimes referred to, Trump has a history of underwhelming debate performances. He had a few in past elections. So I think that in some ways, Harris winning the debate was built into the model, built into the system. It was within Trump world, it was definitely considered a bad debate, but it wasn't considered a total disaster. If he had indulged in the Springfield stuff for 20 minutes and perhaps really went after Harris in racial terms, as he has at times done in the past, and questioned her identity repeatedly and just made it a huge theme over the course of 2 hours, I think it might have moved the needle a bit a bit more, you know, and I think that obviously had Harris gone out there and been put on the defensive and seemed hapless, then that would have been the case as well. But I think that even though Harris did win the debate, I think it was within sort of the within the bounds of expectations. You know, those bounds have been widened significantly in the last decade. You know, what we consider our political norms have expanded. But I do think that certainly it could have been outside even those bounds, you know. But I would just like to go back and say, you made a good point earlier. Right now, these candidates, the polls are so close that they're fighting for every single vote. So even if it's something that might not show up on polling, if the debate means that Harris doesn't get 5,000 more voters in Pennsylvania on November 5th, that matters.
You know,
they're going after, both of them are going after every demographic. And they'll take anything they can get, even if it's something that's so minute that it doesn't necessarily show up in public or private polling. So I don't want to say it doesn't matter at all. Perhaps it wasn't a game changer.
Well, Graham, that has really helped us understand the debate, think through the debate, why it might make a difference, why it might not. And it's just been a pleasure talking to you about this. So I want to thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks for having me.